and I am on the way to hell. What do you think to do? Leave me alone!
Can't do it. We'll do it live. We'll do it live. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
And WBAI, you're on the air. Good morning.
Morning. I think you guys are doing a terrific job. There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Matt Schneid is brilliant and Arpo Martin brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. That's a tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Bit of history. All right, well, let's get the lost Gene Shepherd. No time for music this morning. But we had two options, both from 1962, one about the early few months of the Mets, 1962, new team, on a losing streak already. But I got one call from a feller that wanted to hear the Army episodes, the Army stories, Army gear. Gene Shepherd was in the Army, of course, towards the end of World War II era. He never served overseas. He's mainly stationed around the United States, various Army camps. I imagine he'll talk more about that as we listen to this episode now, entitled, from by the way, from June 5th, 1962. And where the hell is it? Raincoats, helmet liners, and GI shoes. From Tuesday, June 5th, 1962. Gene Shepherd, not available anywhere else but here in the Dustbin of History, from the Gary Hines collection. Thanks, Gary. And thanks to Jim Clavin at Flick Lives for sharing them with all of us as well. Lost Gene Shepherd to close out the Dustbin of History, WBAI New York.
That's better. I'm surrounded by boobs and incompetence. Now we're on the subject
Okay, fine. Okay, Carl, that's it. Go ahead. Just go in there, Carl, and tell them it's all okay, that the professionals took care of it, okay? All right, Commander. So anyway. Hey, what are you doing? Come on. Hey. Now, let's all sit here for about 30 seconds. Be calm. And remember, hey, Walter, remember here, Big Daddy's here, and I'm in charge, okay? Fine. Now, take a deep breath. Pull your gut in. All of you. You get up and you start fidgeting again. Now, you come back and sit down. Now, sit down. There we go. Now, you be calm over there. You take it easy. Take a deep breath now. Just keep your knees loose. Remember, I know precisely what I'm doing. And which reminds me, incidentally, of knowing what you're doing. There was this great news note. Since this is a Tuesday night, it's raining, it's glop. What are you doing, Walt? For crying out loud, you're recording me? He is, for heaven's sakes. What's he doing there? What are you trying to do? So, it's great. Now, you sit down here and you look in here, and that's all right. Now, he's trying to record the McCanns at home at this time. You know, they just got home, 4 o'clock. Well, they record them sometimes. You know, how many of you know that the McCanns at home are sometimes recorded 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning? They come in after an asparagus binge, you know, and they sit around and they holler and things. Well, anyway, let's get back here. So, hey, Walt, you're getting to be fidgeter and more fidgety every night. I mean, you keep passing things from one hand to the other and pressing buttons. You're the only engineer who has to do that. Now, sit down for a minute, will you? Relax. You know, I'll tell you what, Walt, it reminds me sometimes of doing a show where I've done a show with an audience, and the guy in the front row is either alternately blowing his nose, scratching himself, combing his hair, sending out for a sandwich, or arguing with his wife. And then he keeps saying, gee, the show is rotten. I can't figure it out. But anyway, I remember this great news note. I don't know whether you saw it. I might as well come out with it here. It's Tuesday night. There was this great note came in from the British Army. It was on the United Press International Wire. And it talked about the court-martial proceedings that had occurred in a British Army barracks. It seems that this colonel, at 4 o'clock in the morning, had the first sergeant go out and blow this whistle. And all these guys fell out. And the reason he did this is that he wanted to find out what sort of uniforms that the men slept in. Well, it turns out some guys showed up with pajamas, other guys showed up with ski suits, two or three guys didn't show up at all. No, this is the truth. And there was one whole platoon didn't show. They had nothing on at all. They just stood there in the wind. And so he court-martialed the whole crew, and he says, it's well known that the sleeping uniform of the British Army is pajamas. I'm going to see that my command is properly uniformed at all times. Well, the idea of the British Army being properly uniformed at all times, especially at 3 o'clock in the morning when the sack is only... I mean, there's something about this. When a ship is sinking and everything is in proper order, somehow it seems better to go to the bottom just after an inspection. Make sure that your footlocker is all correct. We have just hit a berg, and we want to meet our maker in proper trim. Well, as a matter of fact, my grandmother for years used to say to never let him go out of the house with holes in his socks. He might get hit by a car on Elston Avenue, because, you see, she wanted me to meet my maker all properly with no holes in the socks and with clean underwear on. And that brings up another picture. But that's another story, and certainly we'll keep that for later on. That's afterwards. That's going to be for the postgraduate things, and, you know, we'll have lessons and questions afterwards. But anyway, I remember being in the Army. I will now tell an enigmatic story, which is enigmatic to one-third of the population only. The other two-thirds of the population were ex-dog faces. They will be running into safety islands and rolling out of the sack when they hear this. Anyway, and don't explain it to the other third of the population, who will immediately start bugging you and say, what's he talking about, okay? Well, George, I'll never forget this. I'm in the Army, see, about 2.5 months when this happened, just enough to get vaguely aware of the fact that disaster is impending. And it ain't the way Van Johnson played it all the time in the Army, you know. By this time, the scales are beginning to fall from my eyes. And at the same time, new things are beginning to grow up around me. You know, after you're in the Army for a certain time, you develop a whole new mystique. It's a very special life, and I was at the chrysalis stage, you know, where I had just stopped being a civilian and I was about to become a soldier. This was one of those great moments. And I'd say one of the great moments of education in my life. Now, I've got to tell you beforehand that I'm a cool 17 years old at this point, in case you're interested. I had gone in the Army, well, prematurely. Like some guys age prematurely. Well, I had gone in the Army prematurely. What happened is that there was a lot of excitement happened one afternoon in the kitchen of my house. I came home with eyes alight and with, you know, the tail all bushy and everything. And I had just started in college. And I told my mother, you know, I says, Ma, there was this guy down at the, came down to the school here the other night. And he gave a talk about how if you join the Army in the reserve, you could finish college and you could pick the branch of service that you're going into. And she says, what does that mean? You join in the Army? You don't have to join the Army. They won't draft you for years. And I says, no, Ma, you see, you don't real. Of course, secretly, I was wanting to go in the Army. I want to tell you this. Hey, all the chicks out there, all the men that have been telling you in their life how they didn't want to be in the Army and they thought it was rough and they're glad to be home with Uzi. Well, as a matter of fact, see, one thing they miss most of all is the 9th Division. And I'll tell you, I'm sorry, they missed the 9th Division, they missed the USO, they missed the whole business, they miss being, I don't have time to talk to you, I'm doing a show, Ted. They miss the business of Saturday nights. All of it.
And we will resume our Gene Shepherd program. You know, the one thing, the little cue speakers here where I often work in Master Control do not display a great deal of a low-end hum. And this show is just loaded with it. So I have reduced the hum, and hopefully it will sound a lot better when we hear the new restored version of this program. So let's give it a go. Gene Shepherd, June 5th, 1962, WBAI, New York.
Of course, secretly, I was wanting to go in the Army. I want to tell you this. Hey, all the chicks out there, all the men that have been telling you in their life how they didn't want to be in the Army and they thought it was rotten, they're glad to be home with Uzi. Well, as a matter of fact, see, one thing they miss most of all is the 9th Division. And I'll tell you, I'm sorry, they missed the 9th Division, they missed the USO, they missed the whole business, they miss being, I don't have time to talk to you, I'm doing a show, Ted. They miss the business of Saturday nights, all of it. And they didn't miss you as much as the movies with Loretta Young in them would have you believe. I happened to have been there, you know, and I knew a couple of guys that were engaged to Loretta Young, and it was an awful lot of swinging in some strange places that had nothing to do with Loretta Young. In fact, I'll never forget one night, and that brings up another story in case you're interested. I was at the Signal Corps camp over here at one point. And right over here in Monmouth. And they trained, among other things there, they trained camera crews for the, you know, for these U.S. Signal Corps teams, you know. And now they have all appeared under the aegis, under the jurisdiction of Richard Rogers. It's called Victory at Sea or Victory at Whoopee or whatever it is. And these guys were the guys who were about to go out and shoot that. Well, I'm one Sunday night sitting in front of the radio at the Red Bank USO with a dog face who was a friend of mine, who claimed up to that point to have been a Hollywood cameraman. And I thought, oh, in a pig's ear, you know, every guy in the Army claimed that he was a 500-mile racetrack driver. Or, you know, any great career that you could think of in the Army, you could say you were before, because no one could argue with you. And I was, well, you know, I was played third base for the Columbus Redbirds, actually. I was on my way to the Detroit Tigers when they got me. You know, and no one, who's going to know? Everybody's got a fantasy. Well, this guy tells me, he says, he's this, you know, he's a guy that shot the movies. And he says, well, I've shot Bing Crosby pictures and all of it. And he's a T5. Well, I'm a T5, too. And I knew the T5s absolutely came from the mailroom at Inland Steel. I knew that. So this guy's sitting around there one night. And we're at the USO. We're in the letter writing room. I don't know whether any of you remember the USO in Red Bank. Well, we're sitting there. And it's Sunday night. And of all, you know, one of the things that was on Sunday night in those days was Jimmy Fiddler. Are you with me, Walt? You remember Jimmy Fiddler? And Jimmy Fiddler would come on. He had this little beeper. Attention, Hollywood. You remember that? Attention, Hollywood. Here is a break. Hey, news break. Hollywood. An open letter to Bonita Granville. Bonita Granville, I believe, And you remember that? It was great stuff, see? So I'm sitting there half asleep, and a couple of guys are playing the pinball machines, and another guy's writing a letter for money or something. We're sitting around Sunday night, and it was, well, a drag. The only guys who went to the USO on Sunday night were the guys that had Sunday KP or and slash the guys that were totally broke, and there was no other hope. So we're sitting around, and this guy is sitting by the radio. Get this now. Oh, and up to this point, he had claimed that he was married to this movie star. Oh, come on. I mean, I'm an old movie, but you know, everyone knows that all the movie stars are married to guys like, you know, Jimmy Stewart and all that. And here's this little fat, round guy with a mustache who was a T5, and he's married to this movie star. And it was just one of those crazy things. I didn't seriously believe it. He was in the next bunk to me for about 4 months. While we're sitting there, and Jimmy Fiddler in Hollywood. Hey, an open letter tonight to Bonita Granville. And there will be a review of that new picture, Who Shot John? But just in a moment here, there will be a word from our sponsor. You remember Jimmy Fiddler? Great, see. Oh, boy. He made incoherency seem dynamic. And so we're sitting there, and I'm picking my teeth, and somebody's playing the pinball machine, and we're all T5s sweltering in the mire of having been in the Army 150 years now at this time, when all of a sudden, let's say this guy's name is Charles Watanabe, this cameraman. And let's say that the name of the movie star that he was married to was Lesbia O'Toole. We'll just say that, see? So, special, tonight, divorce proceedings were begun tonight against Charles L. Watanabe, famous Hollywood cameraman, by Lesbia O'Toole. He has been seen making the hot spots in New York City with Bonita Granville. And there was this fantastic moment. We're all sitting there. This poor slob has been on KP with me for 9 years. I know he has. The only hot spot he ever made was the China Clipper. I'm telling you. And he's sitting there with his mouth hanging open. All of it was true. I mean, no one believed this guy. And here with this famous movie star. And one of the guys stopped playing the pinball machine. He turned around and somebody busted a pen nib over there writing the letter. I stop and I look around. I says, Charlie, you're on the radio. And Charlie's got this fantastic look. He has just been informed by Jimmy Fiddler that his wife is divorcing him and he's having a thing with Bonita Granville. And he turns and he says, I never met her before in my life. And I said, who, Lesbia O'Toole? He says, no, Bonita Granville. And all the while you go, blah, 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 Hollywood, an open letter. And we just, oh boy, what a moment. Oy. Speaking of fantasies, this is WORAM and FM New York. This time will come. Don't worry. And so, this is all part of the wild world of the Army. From that day on, I want to tell you this. This guy's career was made in the Army because he became suddenly third page of the Mirror stuff, you know? And do you know that in the Army, guys used to walk around and sell the Mirror? Did you know that? And the News? And I can remember they had it all figured out. I'm just telling you some facts of Army life that you don't know about. You never hear about this in See Here Private Hargrove or any of this jazz. But we used to lie in a sack there, see? And you know, after you've been awakened at, let's say, at 5:10 for 2 years, you sort of automatically do it. You vaguely come to consciousness about 5:09. Well, at 5:10, this thing would go up. Well, you know, the reveille thing would go, and there would be a big cannon. Have you ever heard of transcribed cannon? Well, you know these nuts that have the stereophonic stuff where they play cannons and bowling balls and all that stuff going all the time? Well, the Army did the early research work into this because they had transcribed cannon shots. I'll never forget the time some Shah showed up at this camp I was at, and believe it or not, they played a 21-gun salute on tape. To him. They didn't have a cannon within 100 miles of this camp. This camp happened to be a radar camp. They didn't have any cannons around, you know. So they had this transcribed cannon. They just played it 21 times over. It was the same transcribed cannon that they used to wake us up with. That's a fact. Boom! It would go, and you'd hear the woofers go, and all the field coils started moving. Boom! It would go, and the Shah is looking around. Boom, you there, and it's coming out of the loudspeakers, and the Shah, and you could see his turban going around, and all of us are in formation. This is the first time, probably the first time this guy ever saw an electronic cannon, you know, recorded by RCA Victor, with lyrics by Eddie Fisher. So we're, you know, we're, the funny thing about this, I have to get back to the story here, because The thing about being in the Army was that so much of the stuff that really happened in the Army, you never hear about. It was all a little scut. You know, here for example, now look at the scut in your life. When I say, look the word up, it's a good word because it describes about 97% of life. I mean, you know, scut, you know what I mean? You know, just a little crud, you know, stuff like you walk around, you scratch and you sit, you know, tie your shoes. Nobody ever ties shoes in the movies. Or, you know, breaks a shoelace, or unless it's a gag. I mean, you just scut. I'm not talking about trouble. I'm just talking about stuff. Now, what are you doing now? You're sitting out there listening to the radio. Probably getting ready to flake out. Fooling around. You got nothing to do. You're drinking a beer, or, you know, you're getting ready to have an argument with a chick or something. None of this stuff is ever shown in the movies. Or in dramas or anything. That's called life, you see. That stuff is never touched on in dramas. In writing. That's life, really. The stuff that dramas write about are, you know, like when you get a salad, you get a shrimp salad at this cheapy restaurant, and you go through it, and it's all this, you know, all around it is all this cut up cabbage, and there's all this chopped up tomatoes, you know, and you got a shrimp salad. And you go for 15 minutes on the salad, and you hit one piece of shrimp, you know, all the rest of the, this is the stuff they write the movie about. And they call this a searing indictment of 20th century life. Well, actually, all the rest of the crud around it is life. I mean, all the chopped up glop, you know, that's what you're really living in 900% of the time. So here's a typical example of Army life I will describe to you. We had this reveille at Fort Monmouth, and it went off, the cannon did. I think it's something like 10 minutes after 5. Well, they have a special sun that comes up over Army camps. I'll tell you what this sun does. You know, have you noticed how light it gets so early yet here in New York in the summertime? Well, it is always dark at 5 minutes after 10 over an Army camp. 4 miles away in the big city, the sun can get up at 4:30 in the morning, not over an Army camp. And, no, that's the truth. And have you ever noticed that there'll be a gigantic, wonderful series of great days in New York? Never in an Army camp. It is either raining, or it's cruddy, or it's crummy, or it's hot, or it's, you know, it's just a condition of life. You don't think anymore about good days. Nobody stands out there in a line, you know, where they're picking the details. And says, geez, isn't this a wonderful day, Charlie? That's just a great day, isn't it, Charlie? And, oh, you 6 guys on the end there, go on down to the mess hall. Consolidated mess hall, not the end of the Company B area. Once you go down there, and you 7 guys, you don't stand there and say, isn't this a wonderful day, Charlie? Because if you look up, you're liable to get it, right? And you know where. So you don't look up, you know? And everybody in the Army learns to be shifty-eyed so that no corporal can just level. Have you ever noticed when you're sitting in a classroom and you catch the teacher's eye, you're in trouble? Next thing you know, you're up at the board. Well, so, you know, in the Army, they've made this a past thing. I mean, I have seen a group of veterans. See, the rookies don't know this. Getting picked is a thrill. Because most guys have never been picked for anything in their lives. In the Army, when they fall out, all the guys in the second barracks, you hear on the squawk, all men at second barracks, fall on the company street right now on a double. On the double, all the guys in barracks number 2, get out on the street now, right now. Helmet liners, leggings, and crusty uniform. Get out on the street now. Let's go. And then you hear the guy out there blowing the whistle. Everybody runs like mad, and they get out there, and they're all very eager. These are the new guys in the Army. And the duty corporal says, all right, you 7 guys on the end, you, the big guy with the glasses, from you all the way down to the end of the line, I want you to go with Corporal Watkins here. Watkins, take him out. You know where they're going, Watkins. And, of course, everybody feels great for that medic. You know, he's chosen. Very few of us are chosen in life. But after a while in the Army, you begin to understand what is meant by being chosen. And so after about 2 years, here's what happens, you see. You hear, all you guys in second barracks fall out on the comedy screen on the double. And then you hear about 15 imprecations. Ah, blah, blah, wise guy. And this, by the way, they have two-way PA systems in the Army. What was that in a second bird? Shut up, you wise guys. Get out there and straighten the double now. I don't want any back talk. Come on, fall out now, for God's sake. Hurry up. Then there's a silence, and everybody falls. You see, you get out there. This is the way it works, back and forth. And then everybody is out on the company street. This is a sight you would not believe. You would not believe it. You get an entire platoon, 36 guys out there, and you know you can stand for 10 minutes and try to focus on them, and you can't focus. It's like an octopus. It moves. They're moving constantly, but imperceptibly. And you look, and they take different forms and shapes. So you can't say the tall guy with the glasses. There's no tall guy with the glasses. He keeps blending into the background and fading out and moving back and forth. I have seen 36 guys totally imperceptible on a company street for over a half an hour, and nobody even saw him. I saw a whole platoon once get run over by a truck. Didn't see him. They just kept moving all the time, just shifting, moving, and they it's human camouflage. And you blend into the barracks, you blend into the latrine, you blend into the ground, the rain, and you take advantage of every bit of cover. I'm talking about a real veteran. Every bit of cover. And when they're calling for the seven guys to go down to the consolidated mess to pick chickens for the next 24 hours, boy, you ought to see that. Yeah, I'll tell you, an artillery shell barrage couldn't cause more cover action, more movement than you see that. And they're not running or anything, Walt. It's just amazing to see this go on. And once in a while, you'll hear the first sergeant say, "All right, attention, stand still!" Then there's a moment of silence. And he'll turn his back and he'll say, give me that clipboard. And he turns around again and the whole thing is in movement. It's just like a ballet. It's all going, attention, pull in your guts, attention! Now, they're long silence, and then the guys know they've had it. You see, in the end, you always get it, but you fight a war of attrition all the time. You do nothing without protesting. Well, it takes a long time. And you know, it's funny, I've heard more guys say this. Boy, let me tell you, if they ever get me back in the Army, I know what I do. The thing is, they do know what they do. Can you imagine what would happen if they got all the Yardbirds back from World War II and from the Korean War, and they really got them back in? Boy, you'd see more operating. The Army would really be in trouble. I'm telling you, all the guys, immediately. It takes you 30 seconds, by the way, to fall right back into the old routine. They put the hat on you. I did this play here, this Voice of the Turtle. I put the suit on, and 20 seconds later, I was all ready to buck out. I mean, I had everything going. I was on a 3-day pass. Every minute I was out. I'm serious. It's funny. You get the mentality, you know? It's a wild thing. It's funny, this Army bit. So here is the kind of things that you learn, you know, right away. You begin to learn about life in the Army, real life that you don't know about outside of the Army. And so I'm in the Army about 2.5 months, and I'm one of the great things in the Army, I tell you, is sleeping. There is nothing like Army sleeping. I am nothing like it. Have you ever known? Do you know that sleep can be a positive action? Sleep to most people is a passive thing. Do you know that you can lay there and sleep? Sleep, I mean, in italics. Like some guys are eating. You know, other guys are swinging. Boy, I'm telling you, sleeping is a genuine activity, like doing push-ups. You know, or running the 100-mile race or something. And you just lay there and you're just creatively sleeping. Some guys in the Army worked in sleep like other guys work in clay, you know. It was their medium. And because it was the one sure escape from everything, you know. There's the one conk out, and it's a fantastic. Guys would sleep in the barracks at 8 o'clock at night with fist fights going on, somebody taking the ashes out down on the stove, the duty corporal blowing whistles. This guy is absolutely corked out, and you just see him. And under the brightest light you can imagine, in those barracks they have these yellow light bulbs hanging down in the middle. I can just feel it, you know, right now. But the thing about a GI sack is it is not a bed, it's a sack. It truly is a sack. It sucks you in. In fact, I'll tell you a funny thing about a GI bed. Do you know that I hold a record for Camp Crowder? I'll tell you what record I hold. I hold for over 8.5 weeks, I did not make my bed. I got so that I could crawl into my bed. It was always made beautifully. I could crawl into my bed without even wrinkling it from the top. I would swing from the top. I had this, there was a bar, you see, that you could hang your clothes on. First of all, I have to explain to you people out there that every possible second you could goof off in the Army was precious, like gold. I mean like gold. And when they would blow the whistles in the morning, you had to jump up and run around, and you'd run out and you'd get shaved, and you'd yell about no hot water, and you'd have to make your bed and sweep the floor, you remember, and you'd pour water on the barracks floor. Can you imagine all this stuff in about 8 minutes? You're sweeping the floor down, you're scrubbing it down, you wash the windows, you press your pants, you know, and you have a fight and all this. And all the while, you're getting ready to fall out the company street. You got to do all this stuff, and you got to make your bed. Well, of course, you slowly trim down the things. You trim them down. Like, for example, guys used to paint their face, flesh-colored paint, you see. Then they wouldn't shave for 3 days. I'm telling you the truth. I'm not exaggerating. And you got so I figured one day, you know, I'm a fool. I'm making my bed every morning. So I would make my bed real tight. You know, and the Army makes the bed like the hospital style. You know, it's a very close folded envelope. It's an envelope, really. It's all tight and everything. It has to be so tight, you know, they can drop a quarter and it bounces up in the air. Well, I used to make my bed, and I got so that I could make it real tight. It was like a drum. You could just hear it vibrating at the top. Well, I didn't want to do this every morning. So what I would do when I'm going to bed, see, the retreat was, they'd blow the thing to go to sleep. The lights out would be at 11 o'clock. So I would start lowering myself from the ceiling about 5 minutes to 11 because it had to be done in the light. You see, I had to see what I was doing. So I would hang on to the pipe. There was a pipe that they had running along the barracks all the way in the back where you had your hangers and your clothing, see? Right over my bed was the pipe. So I'd hang on the pipe and I would sort of chin myself and I would lower myself very carefully. My feet are now just approaching the pillow. And I would swing back slowly. Because if I sat on it or something, I would wrinkle it, see? I would swing back slowly, and I would work my feet in all the while hanging, and slowly I would lower myself in, see? Just slowly, like a worm going underground, slowly squeaking, and then finally I would be in, and not a wrinkle. Well, you sleep at attention in the Army. I mean, I got so that I didn't even turn over anything. I just lie there flat, and I would cork out. And the morning I would wake up, and I would put my hands back on the barrack walls and slowly pull myself up the beams until I got a hold of the pipe. Pull myself up. There's my bed. Clean, slick as a whistle, not a dent. 8.5 weeks once without taking the sheets off. 8.5 weeks. I'm telling you, it's the truth. Well, these are things you never hear about in the Army. So every morning at Crowder, you see, Monmouth this was, rather, every morning at Monmouth. And we'd lie there. So by this time, we've all lived in the Army about 100 years in this barracks. But, I mean, real veterans. Everybody had a thing going, you know, and everyone was figuring out how he could, you know. And so it was going great. Everyone had a thing going and so on. And I'm sleeping next to a guy who's got this radio. Now, I don't know whether you lived in New York at the time, but I'm going to ask you a question. See if you remember this. I'm going to sing you the tune. This tune is one of the few tunes that is drilled into my mind. He had this radio, and you see, do you know how they control the lights in the Army barracks? You don't turn them off with a switch at the door. They are controlled from the orderly room. So here's what happens. At 5 o'clock in the morning, or 5:10 in the morning, boom! Gun goes off, and you hear... It's playing like this, you see. And the instant the bugle goes off, they're playing Stars and Stripes Forever on the PA system. Everything, the expression is all hell breaks loose. Well, it does. Everything starts, and the lights go on, full on in the barracks. The guy down in the orderly room presses the lights. They do not do it gently in the Army. You're either asleep or you're running. There's no in-between. See, don't lay there and goof off. So, it was funny. They'd turn on the lights, and the instant they would turn the lights on, this guy's radio would go on, see, at the next bunk. The radio would go on, and it would take about 2.5 minutes to warm up. It was one of these old Philco radios, you know, with the old Arcturus tubes, and it would warm up. And this is what would happen. We would lie there in the sack, you know, everything is blowing, and we had it figured out so carefully, right down to the second, that the most, you squeeze every second you get in the sack, believe me, because it's 100 degrees below zero everywhere else. It's cold in the barracks. I mean cold in the barracks, but it's warm in a sack, see? So we would lie there, and this guy's radio, which was at the next bunk to me, would warm up. And the instant this radio would warm up, you know, it was uncanny. On would come not music, not a guy given the time, but a singing commercial every morning, and we knew that when that singing commercial came on, it was the last second. You gotta go now. You gotta go, see? And I'll tell you what the commercial was. Every time I hear it, I get that funny feeling. I'll award you the brass figurine with bronze oak leaf palm if you can tell me the name of this commercial. I won't sing. I even know the lyrics. I'll just sing you the tune. See if you remember the tune. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Now think of that. Da 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 da. I'll give you one brief clue. It was the only time I've ever heard a singing commercial for a hotel. Well, it was a wartime commercial. You probably didn't hear it. Well, I'll tell you this, what happened. Here's exactly what would happen. The instant we would hear this thing come on, and there was this girl, this nasal girl, singing it with this weak-kneed band, and it was you could just see this band completely staffed from head to foot by four Fs, and not one of them could keep pitch, you know, and they're playing this song. Do any of you remember the name of the thing? I'll tell you, it's a hotel in Brooklyn. Da-da-da-da-da. Is the hotel for you? La da dee dee da 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 dee. She would sing, and then the chorus would come in. La da da hotel is the hotel for you. And then the announcer would say, "Yes, the blah 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 hotel is the hotel for you. The next time you're coming to New York and you want to stay in absolute luxury." Oh, there's one calling. See, he knows it. So this commercial would come on. Well, the minute the commercial came on, we'd hit the floor and start running. Well. This is another element that would happen, huh? That's right, exactly. That is the hotel. The Prince George Hotel is the hotel for you. There's another victim out there. So this commercial would come on, and then this would be the payoff. Immediately upon hitting the ground, we would start running for the latrine, you see, because already, Company B is down there, and they've squirted out all the hot water, see? So we start running for the latrine immediately. And on the way out, it's ice cold, remember? The door would open, and in would come this guy with, of all things, the Daily News and the Mirror. He'd say, "News, mirror here, Daily News, mirror here, a big gang war on the east side, mirror here, there, get out of the way for God's sake, oh!" And we're running through, and here's the guy peddling mirrors and newses to all the T5s running for the latrine. By the way, this scene I have never seen once in the movie. This is exactly the way the army was. It was a nutty routine going on all the time. And you'd see in the distance, like an oasis, the latrine. You'd take off like mad, probably wearing only your fatigue bottoms. Freezing cold, bitter cold. And trailing razor blades and stuff behind you. And you can see down about 150 yards down is the latrine. And all the lights are on, and you see the steam coming out of the windows. It was another warm place. And you run like mad through this bitter cold, falling up and down in the ruts and stuff, and all you can hear is the cursing of guys who are yelling because the hot water has just run out. And I'll tell you, when you're in a GI shower and the hot water runs out, it doesn't do it gradually. 150 guys will be in there, and the hot water's coming. All of a sudden, it's icy cold! And believe me, boy, they know language in the Army. And the L.O., which I was on several occasions. You know, you always hear about, nobody knows about the LO. They only know about KPs. Well, let me tell you, if you think KP is funny, and it ain't, let me tell you about being an LO. LO means latrine orderly. And you'd get, in the morning, there would be the duty roster, and it would say for the next day, the following men will be on KP and have their towels tied to the end of the bunk. You know why they tie your towels to the end of the bunk? Well, because the CQ, at 4 o'clock in the morning, can go right through the whole barracks, and he sees the guys with the towels, the white towels, hanging down at the end of the bunk. These are the guys. All right, come on, let's go, Mac. Let's go. Come on, let's go. Let's go, Mac. And that's it. There ain't no delicacy in the Army. It isn't stopping. Says, "Now, come on, fella. Now, easy, boy. Oh, let's go, Mac. Let's go." And he walks away. And if you go to sleep again, you're dead. Well, this is what the white thing on the end of the bunk means. These are all little bits and pieces in case you're thinking of going in the Army. Well, the latrine orderly is always down at the bottom of the duty roster. After they've listed all the KPs for tomorrow, it says to be LO, PFC, you know, it'll say Shepherd, JP, PFC, 1609-8946, Barracks 2. And that means you're latrine orderly. Well, what happens is this. At 3 o'clock in the morning, this guy comes in, the CQ. He's, "All right, Mac, come on, LO, you Shepherd, huh? Yeah, all right, come on, Mac, let's go, let's go." Well, you get yourself up, and you go down to the latrine. This is what you do. Now, the night before, there have been 48 guys come in drunk. And the first thing they did was stop by the latrine. And when they were there, you know, they had trouble with their meals and everything else, you know. So you got to start with that right away. You see, there's a mop and everything else. You start. Oh, boy. It's 3:30 in the morning now, you know. And so and the wind is howling through the eaves, and it's colder than you know what. Yep, the same witch. You and I both know that same witch. And that's how cold it is. So you're down there in the latrine, and the stuff is going past, and you're mopping up the floor. And you're racing against time, like you always are in the Army. You know why? Because at 5:10, there is going to be this gigantic horde of monsters coming rushing in. They're all going to come tearing in. And they're going to want to, you know, they're going to have to shave. There's going to be 498 people who want to shave with hot water, take a shower. So here you're mopping like mad, up and down you're going. You're mopping, and there's papers and gum, cigar butts, and oh boy, stuff. I couldn't even describe you. I mean, you know. So you're doing it. And down at the end of the barracks, they got this stove. It's a thing. And generally, by the way, it runs on coke. So you start the fire. The fire has gone out. The latrine orderly, by the way, the CQ was supposed to keep the fire going. He did not. So the fire is now out. And you're down there, and you're trying to start the fire. You got the fire going now vaguely, and you got a little thing going down there, and you got about 3 pieces of coke, and you're hoping it catches, because, boy, if you don't, you're really, you know what's in a sling. I'm telling you, it's in a sling. Because it's not only in a sling with the CO and with everybody else, because he wants to shave, too, but also every friend you got in the Army, you know, they're all up there. They want to go. And there's nobody that's nastier than a man coming into a latrine at 5 o'clock in the morning to cold water. So you're in there, you're trying to get the fire going, and finally you get this raging fire going. It's going like mad. And you can hear the hot water's beginning to go. You see the tank, the hot water's going, you got everything mopped, you got the sinks going, and you'd be surprised at the strange sense of accomplishment it is. They have all the sinks clean and everything else clean, you know? You've already got this place looking great. You say, oh, it's going to be great for the boys this morning. And you got the mirrors are shining, and you're down there, and you're wearing your fatigues, and you smell like an old beer can, and you're cleaning up everything. Then all of a sudden, boom, bop, 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 off goes the bugle, bop, 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 and you hear this thunder. Pow! The door opens, and you hear, hey, Charlie Ross! Water pouring, you see shaving lotion on the mirrors, guys are throwing apple cores on the floor, and all of a sudden, hey, the hot water's out, what's the matter with you? Hey, hello, hey, Shepard, you hello? The hot water's going already, and they're yelling and screaming, and then they all go out again, and you're left amid the rubble. Up to your bloomin' knickers. All over in about 2.5 minutes. Total disaster. Cold water, crud all over the floor, paper all over the floor, and half of the guys, by the way, upon getting up in the morning, their hangover suddenly reoccurred all over the floor. You walk around kind of, I just can't describe. You think KP is great? Let me tell you about LO. You just sort of walk around in circles, you know, and you begin to understand something about humanity and life, you know. You really do. You know more about it than Rockefeller ever will know. I don't think he's ever pulled LO. I'm serious about that. And he may be a good man, but I don't even think Kennedy's ever pulled it. I never heard of a JG pulling LO. Did you? Oh, no. No. I mean, half of the guys in the Army don't even know about that, because you see what happens is KP everybody gets. LO, there's only one guy. You're alone. You're fighting it alone. I'm telling you, you got no friends. There's nobody that they can assign as outside man. You can't hope that you're going to get pots and pans, you know, and you goof off down on nothing. I mean, you're going in over the horns every time this crowd comes back. So dinner time, finally lunchtime arrives, you know, and you've got the place swinging again. You finally got it just swinging again. What happens? All over again, only with a vengeance this time. Now they're really going to do it because they're awake. And it's one after the other. One after the other. Finally, lunchtime, dinner arrives, and they come and they relieve, you see, about 9 o'clock. The CQ comes down, he says, hey, hello. Hey, is the hello here? And you're down there sitting by your stove. By this time, you are sick unto death of mankind and the whole mess, the whole rotten mess. You just want to become an owl or something, you know? And you're sitting there, and the place is finally clean. He says, hello, hello, hello. Hey, you are Shepherd? And you say, yeah. Get out of the mess hall, you're through. Incidentally, you have not even been allowed to eat all day long. So you go wandering down to the mess hall to your sandwiches. By the way, I'd like to describe, there is a kind of cold cut that they use in the Army sandwiches. It has a great colorful name. I wish I could use it here. So here you're left with this. Everybody has had chicken. They've been talking about the chicken, you know. They've been talking about the guys have had steak. What do you get? That's right. They don't come to you and say, gee, that was a great job you did today, Shepherd. We've saved you a chicken. They just don't do that. They just remember that the water ran out 30 seconds before they got in. They did not realize it was... You talk about the myth of Sisyphus? Huh. Oh, Camus wasn't in it. I'm serious, he didn't know what it was about. I mean, he had the right look in the eye, but his analogies were very bad. Now, speaking of analogies, we have with us tonight TV Guide. And speaking of the myth of Sisyphus... Yeah, TV Guide. And they have this big feature this week. I don't know what it's about. It's about TV. I would suggest you consult TV Guide if you want to stay au courant. I mean, you know, after all, you've got to be an American. And we also have big preview here. You know, like we have old movies on every night. Well, we preview one of the old movies on Big Preview. And it's on Tuesday night, I believe. Isn't it Big Preview? Fine. And that's on Channel Whoopi here. You can't miss it. And I was going to tell you this, sir, because... I'll tell you one thing. Speaking of education, mothers, if you have a son in the Army, he ain't the same as he used to be. Just leave that stand there. I mean, you put all kinds of connotations on that, but I'll say for the most part, he's better. Really. As you get a sense of reality, you put a guy three or four times on LO, he knows something about the world. He does. You can't pull it over on him very fast. Really. He knows that it's going to happen again in 2 hours, and it's going to be the same stuff. Only maybe more. This is what he knows. Well, I'll tell you one thing that I remember. I was in the Army about 2.5 months. This is part of the education, see, and I'm in my sack. I have learned to creatively sleep. Up to that time, you know, kids don't know about sleep. It's funny. You know, you guys don't know anything about sleep. You're a kid, let me tell you. You do not realize what a bomb this is. And so I'm flaked out, you know. I'm really sacked away there. It must have been about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, in case you're interested in what happened. It's about 3 in the morning, some ungodly hour. We got about 2.5 hours before reveille. Lights out is way back in the distance somewhere, and you have been really corked off, and it's nice and warm and snug, and the rain is coming down, and the wind is going past the barracks. It's a great feeling, you know, to be. It really is. There is a certain warmth in the Army, too. You know, you're all in this together, and you're all bailing. So you're laying there, and you're all asleep, you know. And all of a sudden, you hear this wild whistling out on the company street. All right, you guys, fall out. All right, let's go, fall out. Fall out now, helmet liners. I want you to be in helmet liners, raincoats. That's all I want you to wear. Helmet liners, raincoats, and GI shoes. Fall out immediately. Fall out on the company street. The doctor is here. Fall out. And you wonder what do you mean, GI rain, just nothing but raincoats and helmet liners and GI shoes? It's raining out, it's cold. And the next thing you know, you're standing out in the street in the most embarrassing position you ever imagined in your whole life. You couldn't comprehend this at 4 o'clock in the morning. And the doc is going up and down the line, and suddenly another leaf has been turned. Another element in your education has been completed. The education of Henry Adams, let me tell you, that wasn't in it, boy. 3:30 in the morning at Camp Crowder with the monsoons coming in off the Ozarks. Helmet liners, raincoats, and GI shoes fall out immediately in the company street. Come on, let's go, you guys. Immediately, I said. Now, don't goofing off. Stay out of the latrine immediately now. Let's go.
Gene Shepherd, not available anywhere but here in the dustbin of history, not online, nowhere else, but right here. From June 5th, 1962. Raincoats, helmet liners, and GI shoes. Gee, I wonder what was going on out there on the barracks street. Well, I'll leave you to ponder that as we bid you upon the good evening. from the dustbin of history. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. Next week, well, we'll dip into our international horror grab bag and see what comes up. Probably an episode of The Creaking Door. Maybe the next Macabre, as they called it. And certainly another Lost Gene Shepherd episode on next week's program. All right, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be here Sunday night, 8 until 10, with the Golden Age of Radio, featuring Gunsmoke and who knows what else. So you join me then, or right back here next Wednesday midnight for the Dustbin of History. Good evening.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah, yeah. That would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal. Well, I think I'll